And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Okay, there we go. Got it going? Sometimes I forget to push the record button exactly the way that I should. That way, I know some people, they like to come back after this has been recorded, and they want to study the details, and they want to find out, what did I miss? What does that look like? So they'll go back and just listen to it. Well, I'm live this morning. The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. I sure hope I can say something that is encouraging to you today, that gives you some help or some hope. You know, God has designed the body in the most amazing, sophisticated way. I'd probably go so far as to say you're the pinnacle of God's creation. When the Bible says you're fearfully and wonderfully made, how could you not agree with that? You don't have to. It's your choice. But I do. And so, you're supposed to be radiant and energetic. You're supposed to be a bearer of light. I was reading about a doctor in Europe that's experimenting by doing IV or intravenous light therapy. I don't know exactly how that works, but I would really like to know. That is so fascinating how he's taking light. You know, the bottom line is this right here. When the sunshine at the center of our solar system shines on the leaf of a plant, I'll just say a tomato plant, well, the plant is capturing those wavelengths of light or energy from the sun, and they're carrying that light into the plant. And so when you eat a tomato, what you're doing is you're eating captured light from the sun. You're eating light. You're eating the energy of the sun. Did you know that? It is so fascinating. I remember one time I watched a YouTube video. It was a short about red blood cells, but I find that so interesting because, you know, I'm a visual person just like you are. And when you see a red blood cell that actually is holding all the oxygen that it's supposed to, meaning the gas tank is completely filled up or the battery is at 100% charge, oh my, that red blood cell is glowing like an emitting light source. It's really amazing. But when you find someone is anemic and the red blood cell is very deficient in iron, which without iron you can't have hemoglobin, well, then it can't transport electrons and those wavelengths of light and photons of energy. It's just amazing. You know, when a disease process first begins in the human body, it is very, very, very easy to treat because it's in its infancy. It's easy to turn it around. But what it is very hard to figure out. Sometimes a doctor can't figure out what's wrong because the blood test may come back normal. Well, what if we looked at the blood test in a different way? What if the blood panel that your doctor runs gives such a rich, you know, insight? It gives you all these clues as to maybe what's out of balance in the human body. And this morning, I came across an article, and I don't even know if you'll find it interesting or not, but I liked it, though. And I have this great attraction for studies that come from Japan. And one of the reasons why I like them very much is I don't think that the Japanese researchers care a lick about the Food and Drug Administration and what they want them to say. Which, isn't that what we're supposed to do? We're supposed to aggressively pry out the truth. What is the truth on this? Now, you realize in the world that we're living in, not everybody's into the truth. Some people want to make up narratives that would be false. I watched a brief interview with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I found it so amazing. The reporter was trying to question him about what's wrong with the Food and Drug Administration. He was saying, well, for example, and he used an example of Fruit Loop cereal. Maybe you don't know what Fruit Loop cereal is, but the next time you go to the grocery store and you want to look at things that are highly processed and loaded with chemicals and loaded with dyes and colors and all manner of chemicals that you probably, you know, just like I can't pronounce the name of all of them, and you just wonder, what are they? But in the back of your mind, you think to yourself, Well, the Food and Drug Administration is surely for us. They would never do anything that would harm the health of our young children or damage the future health of a young child, or would they? But the reporter is questioning RFK Jr., and he's saying, if we were in Canada right now, and I think I'm quoting this right, I watched on the YouTube video, that Fruit Loop cereal would have maybe 2 chemicals in there if this was Canada. But here in the United States, there are 18 additional non-food-based nutrients or chemicals. You know, one of the oils I was reading about, it's just all unnecessary. It's just garbage. And you wonder why we're so sick. You know, has anybody ever cured their high blood pressure by taking 7 different high blood pressure medications? Well, no. Have they potentially wrecked and ruined their health because of it? Yeah. How many people have kidney failure because of the toxic side effects of the drugs that are used to try to cure the very thing that they're causing? I don't know. It's a big number, though. Did you know that canola oil today is probably... So when you look at a salad dressing and it says it contains canola oil, do you think that's natural? No. 100% genetically modified. It is not what you call real food. It has no value whatsoever. So what happens when you consume a salad dressing that's loaded with canola oil? Well, number one, those seed oils, they can clog up your liver for as long as 6 months. It's hard to remove. And what if you're a woman that's listening to me right now and you like to eat salads? Well, I praise you for that. Good job. Eat real food. But the problem I would have is, why would you want to use canola oil if you knew it's going to clog up your liver for at least 6 months? It takes that long to remove it. I think the immune system has to get to work on trying to remove anything that doesn't belong inside of you. So what's going to happen when the immune system cannot remove the canola oil from the liver? Well, number one, your liver is going to be clogged up. It's going to be slow and sluggish. I can tell you one lesson I've learned the hard way that I know it to be true now. If you're a woman and you want to have a very sluggish thyroid and you want your metabolism to be super slow, well, just have a sluggish, clogged up liver. That'll do it for you. Or another way of saying it is, if you want to ensure that you will absolutely not lose weight when you try to lose weight, let's just clog up your liver. That'll make it happen. So what's the takeaway at this point? Canola oil is going to clog you up. Okay. It's not real. There's no nutritional benefit to canola oil. So if you want to have a sluggish liver, guess what you're going to have? You're going to have a very slow, sluggish thyroid. You're not going to have what's called an efficient, good working metabolism, which means you're not going to have the energy that you need. You know, I could probably break everything down in health into probably 2 possible categories. Number one, how much energy does a person make or manufacture? Because basically, you could probably build a really good case that health begins and ends at what goes on the cellular level. And so if we look inside of your cells, they have these teeny tiny organelles. Just because they're small, and you got to have a special microscope to see them or image them and look at them, they're called mitochondria. But just because they're small doesn't mean they do not have a huge impact upon your health, because they do, because that's where energy production takes place. So when the sunshine shines upon the tomato plant, and you eat a tomato, you're eating the captured energy of the sun. You're transporting light inside of your body into the mitochondria. Well, the mitochondria have got to make energy for you to feel great. Maybe I could say it this way. Energy is the currency of the body. If you don't have enough energy, guess what's going to happen? You're going to have a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't get done. Your body can't perform. It can't heal. Now, is that what you want? No, I know the answer to that. You want your body to be in a good place where it's able to heal. You don't want chronic inflammation. That's probably another simple definition. Inflammation means repair deficit. That means the body is not able to rise to the occasion and do the best that it's capable of. It's not able to heal tissues that are damaged. If your tissues break down faster than your ability to heal them, then guess what's going to happen? You're going to have symptoms of some kind. And that could be everything from low energy. That's a pretty powerful symptom. That could be pain or inflammation that just makes you really miserable and uncomfortable. That's another one. What if your sleep is rotten? Well, that's a big one right there too. So if I break down health into two equations, it's the amount of energy that your cells are able to make, specifically the mitochondria inside the cells. And then number two, sleep. Sleep is easily 50% of health and healing. Because when you sleep well at night, see, what I would like is, I would like everyone that's listening right now to be able to fall asleep relatively easily, stay asleep throughout the night, and that means not getting up 25 million times to go to the bathroom to pee, and then waking up refreshed. And when you wake up refreshed, your mind is ready to go, you're ready to start tackling the day, you're working your plan. You know, you wrote down the night before the four or five or six or seven or eight things that would be important to try to accomplish that day. And maybe one of the things on that list is you want to do some study or some training. What man out there doesn't need to continually try to improve themselves? Well, we know the answer to that. As long as God has given you the breath of life, you need to be trying to improve yourself. I don't think there's a magic age where you say, now that I have turned 60 years of age, I've decided that I'm going to retire. I'm not going to try anymore. I'm going to leave that to the younger generation. No. I just listened to the best program of all time on Focus on the Family here on the KBGS. I was supposed to be studying for my program, but I loved everything that woman said. women teach the younger women. Well, are you doing that? Well, the same is true for older men. Aren't we supposed to be completely... Am I not responsible for trying to encourage you and to lift you up? Yes. Some people don't want to be encouraged, but, you know, you can't do anything about that. But you can try. If they reject it, that's on them. But God wants what's best for us. We can completely trust in Him on every level. So, yes, that's my plot and my plan this morning. What do we do to drastically improve the ability of your body to make energy? And I promise you, if you eat Fruit Loop cereal this morning, you are not making that happen. Because you're putting inside of your body 18 toxic chemicals that, even though the Food and Drug Administration says it's okay, they're not okay. If you listen to what they say, you're going to have the average typical American health. I do not want that for you. I want you to have vitality. I want you to be glowing and radiant. I want you to be able to command your body to do anything that you want to do. And your body says, yes, sir, I will obey the general. You're supposed to command your body. So energy and quality of sleep. Okay. So I came across this article right here. And I thought to myself, how is this actually relevant? And I started to think about it, and I thought, you know, I don't need to go in all of the information that it says, but I thought to myself, this is actually good for everybody. And so let me back up one slot. If you consume genetically modified oils like seed oils, is that going to ruin your health? Well, the answer is yes. I suppose if it's your life goal to develop disease, and that's a good track to be on, which nobody wants that. That's probably me being slightly sarcastic, which I probably shouldn't do. Anyway, there was a study that I came across, and it came from Niigata University in Japan. And I like them because they just are pretty good about telling the truth straight up what they find. I don't know that you can ask for more than that. All you want somebody to do is just to tell you the truth. Then it's completely up to you to decide, what am I going to do with this information? How am I going to use it? By the way, the phone number here, it's been a while since I've given it out, but I'll give it out, 903-589-8507. So, basically, in this study, they wanted to find out And this is just the abstract, but it says the more fish fatty acids, that's the same as fish oil, the more fish fatty acids that elderly people consume, the more of their own teeth they will retain. Well, this is a pretty good discovered dentist from the university. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I have not been diagnosed, but just by family members saying that I may have sleep apnea, and I'm wondering what I can do to help with that.
Well, I'm gonna make it sound pretty simple right here. Mm-hmm. Some of this, you're just gonna have to take what I'm saying, and you're gonna have to run with it and pursue it yourself. But the problem is you're overbreathing.
Okay.
And so you've heard of the website called YouTube, haven't you?
Yes.
It almost sounds ridiculous for me to kind of bring that up, because I'm sure I'm the only one living under a rock that hadn't heard of it. But anyway, if you went to YouTube and you typed in, and there's a lot of ways of doing this. There's a guy that I like very much. He's written a book called The Oxygen Advantage. That would be a good... that would be a good channel on YouTube to look up. And the reason I'm going there is it's going to teach you the correct way of breathing.
Okay.
And so there is a compound, if you want to call it a chemical, very, very interesting. It's made by the body. It's called nitric oxide.
Okay.
And usually when somebody has a generous amount of nitric oxide, if you want to call it NO, as in no for short, that's the way it's abbreviated, they don't have sleep apnea. So if I say it in reverse, the lower you are in nitric oxide, the more that you have sleep apnea. So if you tell me that you go to sleep and you wake up totally refreshed, you don't have sleep apnea. Nitric oxide is one of the most interesting compounds when it comes to the health of the lungs and the brain and the heart. You know, and probably every cell in the body, because the better you have blood flow that's rich with oxygen, the healthier every single cell in the body is and the more energy you're able to produce. Just like your car. If we can't get enough oxygen into the engine of the car, it ain't going to run right. Or if we clog up a tailpipe and you can't, if the engine can't breathe. Anyway, so there's a type of breathing that you could look up. It's called Buteyko breathing. I'm going to try to spell that. I don't know if I have it right, but I'm close. B-U-T-E-Y-K-O. It's a, that's just the name of a Ukrainian researcher or scientist that I think was actually a very brilliant human being. And he took his observations in the hospital and he figured out how to solve these problems like sleep apnea. So there's a type of breathing that you could look up called Buteyko breathing. And so I'm going to oversimplify all this. So if I were to tell myself right now that the only way that I'm going to breathe is only through my nose, never going to breathe through the mouth. I mean, except you're talking or eating. You can't do that. And so if you're going on a long walk, then you tell yourself, you make a deal with yourself and say, I promise myself I'm going to make every single effort to only breathe through my nose as I go for this walk. So what happens if you're going up a steep hill and all of a sudden it becomes very, very difficult to breathe through your nose and you're saying, I can't do it. My nose is clogged up. I'm starving for oxygen. Well, you got two choices. You either open your lips and breathe through your mouth to get enough air, or you slow it down where you're forcing, you're trying to retrain your body just to perform what's called nasal breathing.
Okay.
Now, with Buteyko breathing, one of the things that you might do is you're trying to, see, you're overbreathing. I'm trying to slow down your breathing a lot where, to me, it's very, very easy just to breathe two times a minute if you're not talking. You may, and I'm going to simplify it and say, what if you were to inhale for 7 seconds, hold that deep inhalation for 7 seconds, blow out slowly only through your nose for 7 seconds, and then hold that exhalation for 7 seconds? Well, that's basically, you know, 30 seconds. I added 2 seconds to it, but anyway, it's easy to do. But I think what will happen is when you do that, you're going to find out that your body actually retains more oxygen. I don't know if you remember this, but like when I was a boy, if somebody had a panic attack or they had like a major anxiety attack, we would put a brown paper sack, like a lunch bag, to carry your lunch to school over their mouth, because you're trying to recirculate the carbon dioxide because it's person's overbreathing. And carbon dioxide, it plays one of the most valuable roles in controlling what's called oxygen saturation. So another way of saying this is when you have plenty of oxygen in your blood, you really do feel really, really good. Your mind is really, really clear. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but do you feel amazing when you wake up?
I am a morning person, so
well, that's good.
My best mood is in the morning, and, I mean, I love turning on the radio and, you know,
did you just say that you love my program in the morning? Is that what you're saying?
On Saturday mornings, I listen to you.
Oh, my goodness. No, that's... But do you feel like you're starving for oxygen at night? Or do you snore?
I do wake up. I've been told I snore. I do wake up several, you know, a couple of times in the night.
Well, what's your bedtime? Did you say you are gasping for air? Yeah.
No, I don't feel like I am.
Okay, well, maybe you're not. That would be a more severe manifestation if you just wake up gasping like, oh, my goodness, I'm choking. So if you go to bed at 10 o'clock, what would you say if you were to look at the clock or your phone or something, if you're curious when you wake up what time it is, what would be the first time that you might wake up?
Probably about 2.
Okay, well, would you believe me if I told you that you have this organ just beneath your right lung called the liver? And the liver is actually quite amazing. I'm not even capable of telling you everything it does. I find out new stuff all the time. But your liver, it is literally doing its most work to improve your health. between the hours of 1 and 3 in the morning. So if a person wakes up wide awake at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's an indication their liver's clogged up.
Okay.
You know what I'll do sometimes with patients? Now, don't tell anybody my secret, okay?
Oh, okay.
But here it is. I use every single person that walks in my door as my own personal guinea pig. See, I'm doing research, and I'm trying to put everything to the test and see how it works. And so if somebody says, this is madness, Dr. Morgan, I'm tired of getting up and peeing all night long, I'm tired of waking up multiple times, it takes an hour to fall back asleep, I might give them a little bit of milk thistle right before they go to bed, as one example. And see if all of a sudden they start sleep. Yes, because what we're doing is we're trying to tap into, what do we do to start unclogging the liver where it can start working right? Because if the liver works right, you're not going to wake up between 1 and 3 a.m. That's probably my main point I'm getting to.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard what I said earlier, but I said that people that consume canola oil or maybe fried foods or salad dressing, that's a pretty good way to clog your liver up right there. Canola oil. There's no way on God's green earth that the Food and Drug Administration could say, we have such fabulous studies that canola is so health-promoting. It's impossible. It's about the most toxic stuff of all time. There's nobody that needs to consume canola oil to produce health, unless you want to produce disease. And so if you use, that's why we're building a case toward using good, high-quality oils like, I'd say olive oil would be the top of the list. Then if you want to look at things like coconut oil and avocado, then we could round out some things that could probably be good for you. But if you if you went to YouTube and looked up Buteyko breathing or the Oxygen Advantage, just play with the idea of doing these breathing exercises. And so if you're driving somewhere, you can do them. And if it doesn't take too long, you'll probably start noticing the snoring goes away because you're opening up your airways and you're increasing your body's production of what's called nitric oxide. The other thing is just sunlight, sun therapy, or heliotherapy. Do you spend much time outdoors in the natural light?
I try to.
Good. That's smart.
I do like to do that.
Is there any chance that you have an allergy at all to, like, dairy products? Because that could clog your nose up, that and sugar.
I don't know of any allergies, really, but, I mean...
Do you breathe well through your nose or your sinuses at night?
I think so.
Well, then it may be that you've lost, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but it may be that you've lost just a smidgen of your muscle tone, or the diaphragm muscle itself is not as strong and well-toned and efficient as it should be. Would you believe me if I told you that your diaphragm actually weighs more than the heart?
Oh, really? Wow. Never heard that.
Well, and the diaphragm is really one of the most interesting pumping devices in the body. You want to get blood back to the heart? Well, you got to have your diaphragm. But I would say if somebody has sleep apnea, most likely their diaphragm is not pumping as efficient. So the Buteyko breathing or the Oxygen Advantage breathing exercises, those are going to go a long way to helping you understand, how do I get my diaphragm working better again?
Okay.
All these things will help you.
All right. Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay. Have a good day. Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
One of the simple ways to maybe prove this or bear this out, if you were snoring at night like she was talking about, what if you just got one of those breathe right nasal strips and you put it on your nose? If all of a sudden you stop snoring, well, that should answer the question for you. If I get more air and more oxygen at night, then I don't snore. There you go. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Sounds like I caught you off guard.
Yeah, well, I dropped my phone about the time I...
Oh, that's all right. I've done that too.
Pushing buttons early in the morning.
I know. It should be outlawed. How can I help you today?
I have two questions. One, my wife has recurring polyps in her colon, and so even though we're in our 70s, she still has to do the colonoscopy, the colon check fairly often instead of being finished with it, she still has to do that. And then I have another question, if you have time, after that, if you can talk about that.
Okay. You want me to talk about this one first?
Sure. Sure, that'd be great.
Have you ever heard the term called biofilm? It's spelled B-I-O-F-I-L-M, biofilm.
Okay,
this may be kind of a gross, disgusting way to start the topic this morning, but if you've ever had like a sinus infection and you just couldn't breathe and you knew there was something was in your nose and sinuses that was taking up space and keeping you from breathing, what if you blew your nose and all of a sudden this green, yellow stuff comes out that's just gooey and gunky? I'm not going to go into any more detail. That's probably bad enough, isn't it? But essentially, those are biofilms. That's just going to represent an area in the body where you have infection. So,
okay.
I know I'm choosing just to go down this one, you know, path right here. But in the colon, we have literally, I'm just going to say trillions because I think it's true. You have trillions of bacteria. And the bacteria can be either one or the other. Either the bacteria, they help you digest your food, they break down toxins, they remove carcinogens from the body. You give them a place to live and you give them a little bit of your food to eat, and what they do in turn is they make things like vitamin B12 for you, which is essential to human life. You can't live without it. And so I'm just going to say that there's good bacteria and there's bacteria that can be quite toxic, quite poisonous. Some of my question on if they're emitting venom like a king cobra would. I saw a video of a black mamba biting a lion. The lion lived for maybe an hour before it died. I would call that pretty toxic venom from a black mamba in Africa. But either the bacteria are going to do good things for us, or they're going to be types of bacteria. They're going to be quite toxic. Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
And so if you were to go and do your own research today, you would type in, do toxic bacteria have any correlation to polyp formation? And you're going to find out that, oh boy, yes, they do. So I'm going to suggest that if she has recurrent polyps, that she probably has what are called biofilms. These are just gunky, slimy, toxic infections that have set up shop and are living in the colon. And so what we're doing is we're asking, what can we do to change the internal environment? Now, I know I'm an oversimplifier, but I always think with polyps, you can go a long way to solving that one if you just cut out the refined sugar and the processed foods. So I'm not trying to come across as judgmental and say your wife is eating sugar, but there's a huge difference between the sugar that would be found in strawberries or raspberries or blueberries or watermelon than what it would be from Fruit Loop cereal. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm writing it down.
Okay, cool. No, hey, I like that. If you wanna master something, write it down, right?
Yes.
So if this were me, here's the things that I would look at doing right here to try to change the balance. I know there's a lot of people that just don't like this, but I'm telling you, there's not many things that work as well as this. If you want to call it a vegetable, if you want to call it a spice, if you want to call it a food flavoring, I'm on board with all of them. It's called garlic. Garlic is one of the most amazing things that a person can take when they're trying to improve the health of their gut or their colon, because garlic doesn't seem to do anything to remove the good beneficial bacteria from the colon. No. But garlic has this unique ability to helping to remove these toxic biofilms. And see, the immune system, that's really what polyps mean. It means the immune system is failing in the colon. And so the immune system wants to remove anything that might be poisonous to the body. It's really, I mean, I could probably break it down. The immune system has got to remove anything that's toxic, poisonous, venomous. If you want to say toxic waste or debris that's building up, any toxic tissues or toxic bacteria, you need the immune system to do that. But these biofilms, what they do is they allow these toxic germs to live in the body, but they can hide out where they're immune. It's almost like a cloaking device. I think back in the 1960s when I used to watch Star Trek, the Klingons would have a cloaking device that would make them invisible to the Star Trek, the USS Enterprise. You know what I mean?
I remember that. Yes.
So these biofilms, she's probably got quite a bit of those. That's one of the reasons why, if I can encourage her to incorporate more onions, more garlic. I think the root spice called ginger is amazing in its own right, and so is turmeric, black pepper, salt. Salt is hugely important. If a person doesn't get enough good, high-quality salt, they're going to be prone to infections and problems in the body. I think one of the latest studies demonstrated that when they tested, have you ever heard the term pink Himalayan salt?
Yes, we have some.
Well, if it comes from either Pakistan, if it comes from Poland, Germany, I'd say India, it is totally toxic. It's garbage. It's not worth anything. It's got too much contaminants in it. Now, that doesn't mean I can explain exactly at which point in the processing process that they took good, clean salt and they made it dirty and toxic. I don't know the answer to that. I'm just telling you, take what I'm saying at face value, that it may not be good. So a person might want to go to, a different form of unprocessed salt. One example that comes to my mind might be Redmond salt. And so if they harvest that from a mine in Salina, Kansas, or in Utah, that would be one that would be tested that wouldn't be, like, totally toxic. I think it's okay. So that just means switching from pink salt to, Redmond salt. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
And so does your wife have what we would call pretty good normal bowel movements?
She thinks so.
Okay. Then I'm gonna cover a different topic then. I would say calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D are very critical when it comes to trying to make sure that the lining of the gut is very healthy and happy and you don't have polyps.
Good. Okay.
And so one of the things your wife could do is when she goes to the doctor, they could actually measure her vitamin D levels. And you've heard of vitamin D, haven't you?
Oh, sure.
Okay, yeah. And vitamin D, I'd probably say I've read so many articles on this. I'm not trying to tell you that I'm the master. But I would say there's a level of vitamin D that there's just, you're not going to be able to prevent polyps, and that's probably going to be below the number 40. So if your wife had closer to an optimal, meaning kind of the Goldilocks, just right amount of vitamin D, that's probably going to fall somewhere between the number of 75 and maybe 100, something like that. Does that sound reasonable?
Well, I don't know. What are the units? 75 to 100, what?
Well, that's I didn't explain that very well. When you go to a doctor and say, could you please have the lab measure the amount of vitamin D that's in my blood, I think it's going to be measured in nanograms per milliliter. But the number that I'm giving you is correct, between 75 and 100. That I'm not saying what you would take orally. I'm saying measuring what they would actually find in your body. Does that make sense?
Okay. So that'd be through the blood test.
Yeah. And so if you were to do like a magnesium blood test, I would say somewhere around 2.4 to 2.6 is just perfect. And then calcium levels. When a person, does your wife have cramps at night?
No.
Okay. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can look at this. So if you're wanting to greatly improve the health of the lining of the gut, you got to clear the toxic waste out first. I like an herb called Spanish black radish because it works so well. If you use garlic, man, garlic is so hard to beat at turning this around. And if a person's eating a lot of sugar, you got to cut that out. I'm a huge fan of, if you call it sauerkraut, if it's raw, fermented, or kimchi, that's absolutely one of the best things that you could eat a forkful of every day. If you're really trying to improve the health of your gut, which I don't have any problem saying infection, 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 infection is the cause of all problems. And so I'm kind of suggesting in a roundabout way that she may have too much toxic germs in her gut that we need to kind of clear out.
Okay. You were about to mention calcium, the calcium level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Target calcium level.
Yeah. Somewhere around 9.5 to 10 is usually a great number.
Okay.
So, like, if your doctor does what's called a comprehensive metabolic panel, but man, I'm just telling you what I think. I think these things are gold mines. They give you so much information, but that information is only valuable if a person points it out to you or you study it for yourself. I think the days of a person saying, my doctor says everything's perfect, but you look at their body and they're like a complete disaster health-wise. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just the way it is. I mean, haven't you ever been to Walmart before on a Tuesday morning and you've seen people on the wheelchairs that are like 30 years old? It's just horrible. And so what we want to do is we want to help lift them up and encourage them. I don't want them to be in a state of, you know, physical distress and have horrible health. So I think the blood test is one of the most useful tools that you can look at to determine the health of a human being. I'll tell you what I would think of. If she has polyps that keep coming up, I would look at her white blood cell count. And I think one of the studies that I looked at several years ago shows any time that the white blood cell count is 5.7 or below, that's 5.7, that means less than 6. That's what you see with chronic infection. The other one that I just read this. I went to my computer and I typed in, what does it mean if hemoglobin A1C is above 5.7? That's chronic infection. First time I ever read that before, but I started looking at study after study and they're going, all right. You could literally have a person whose glucose could show up normal on a blood test, but their hemoglobin A1C is 5.6, 5.7. That means they have some type of hidden infection in the body. And I'll tell you this, bacteria or viruses or cancer cells or protozoas, amoebas, parasites, they want to live. And so they figured out in order to live, they got to be pretty stealthy and they got to trick your body into just looking the other way. So sometimes they'll make a slimy coating they live in or they'll burrow into the tissue and they'll surround yourself with stolen genetic material. It's so amazing. But we're trying to help your wife's health improve greatly. So those are some things that you can look at. So if you have any blood markers that are out of range, I really think you should pursue that with your doctor and just put them to the test and say, what exactly does this mean and how does it relate to my health and what can we do to improve it? Don't you think the days are over that we just take for granted that the doctor says that everything's normal, but you have 5 or 6 things that are either high or low? That doesn't even make sense. What else can I do to help you?
Well, we have one other question, if you have time.
Sure, ask away.
My granddaughter, in her late 20s, developed blood clots in her legs.
Yeah, well, she's taking birth control pills.
Yes, and she had clots in her lungs also.
Well, you can't take birth control pills. That's the number one. If you want to have clots form, okay, that's going to do it. You can't take birth control pills and have... And the reason I'm being kind of firm on this, I don't want her having a stroke and being paralyzed the rest of her life on one side of her body.
Okay.
Would you believe me if I told you they just came out and they showed that when they measure the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, they're finding significant amounts of a chemical or a drug in the chicken sandwich called carbazine. You ever heard of carbazine?
No.
You know what it is? It's a contraceptive. It's basically birth control pills for a chicken. So if you're eating a Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, you're eating birth control pills for a chicken.
Wow.
And maybe they do that to keep the chickens from laying eggs. They want the energy going to growing so they can make a chicken sandwich out of it. I don't know. Something like that. But isn't that a shame that we would go and eat a sandwich and it's going to be full of birth control pills?
Yes.
Well, I'm using the word pills as my example. I'm sure they delivered another way. They probably don't have a human being going along saying, open your mouth, we got a pill for you. Yeah, but sorry, I wasn't trying to be rude and cut you off, but she's taking birth control pills, and she's going to, basically, her liver and gallbladder are going to fail her at some point. And she's going to have a blood clot that either goes to the brain or the heart, and that's going to be disastrous. What she needs is she needs Rutin, R-U-T-I-N, is a flavonoid. It's actually a flavanol derivative or an analog of what's called quercetin. You may have heard of quercetin before.
Yes, yes, you've mentioned it before.
Oh, yeah, there. Good memory. So it's found on the skin of apples. It's in grapes. It's going to be in onions. So if you make her a taco today, it has to be loaded with onions.
Okay.
But she needs rutin. Rutin will go a long way to cleaning up all the blood and the clots and stuff. I'm sorry. That sounded like I was making a medical claim. Let me rectify that. Rutin will be very supportive to make sure that she doesn't have clots form. And you can look up the medical studies. So if I quote the medical doctors, that's pretty accurate.
Okay. Yeah.
So she needs rutin to kind of repair her capillary beds and her blood vessels and make sure that the lining of her arteries aren't inflamed. If it was me, magnesium, fish oil, rutin, man, home run right there for her.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for mentioning those things.
You betcha. You're sure welcome. Thank you for your phone call. I hope you have a very, very good day.
Well, thank you. And you too.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open. It looks to me that there might be 15 to maybe 16 minutes left. Let's go to the phone lines. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I kind of have three questions on the same subject. When the skin on your heel, the bottom of your foot, thickens and then splits open.
That's a riboflavin deficiency and a pancreas problem.
Okay.
So the pancreas is under great stress, and you're deficient in vitamin B2 or riboflavin.
Okay, B2 and riboflavin, okay.
Could I interest you in a nice meal of liver and onions for lunch today?
Well...
Oh, no, I have zero success rate at recommending that. I need to stop. Nobody ever takes me up on that.
I have a prior commitment. A friend is treating me to lunch today, and I really don't think that's on the menu.
Wait a second. I could text your friend and say, what if you stop by the old-time country tavern and you could have it there?
Yeah, we're going the wrong direction. We're going up to Lindale.
Oh, boy. Well, okay. No, but did you want to know more about that?
Yeah, and I am type 1 diabetic, so
there's the pancreas. Okay. All right.
Problem. Yeah.
Well, let me kind of float it this way and you tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
I was reading a study where they tried to give I can't remember the number of people. Can I just say 45 individuals? They wanted to see what would happen when they forced them to eat. Probably wasn't too hard. An extra, I think it was 1,200 calories a day. I don't know. Maybe they said, you've got to eat two extra slices of cheesecake with heavy syrup and sauce on the top of it. They probably got to 1,200 calories, no problem. But the thing of it is, some people, when they ate an extra 1,200 calories, it actually caused a tremendous increase in metabolism and weight loss. But you understand what I'm going to say next. Not for everybody. Some people gained a bunch of weight, some people maintained their weight, and some people lost a lot of weight. But the point that I'm getting to is there's a thing called biochemical individuality, and you know as well as I do, every human being has strengths and they have weaknesses, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everybody does, and I think that's the way that it's just got to be on this fallen world. But it may mean that you're... metabolism or your cellular machinery, they may have a much higher need for riboflavin or vitamin B2 than what you're currently providing. And so you can always put that to the test to see if consuming an extra amount of vitamin B2 or riboflavin fixes the job or fixes the bill for you.
Okay.
And that's really the only reason why I said liver. You can always take it in a supplement form, but I think it's highly valuable because liver is one of the rare foods that actually has probably all 45 to 48 B vitamins that a human needs, not just one of them. So you could actually experience some degree of rejuvenation by taking liver pills, maybe.
Okay. Help me with my, I guess it's my mentality. I was taught early.
Well, you're wrong. It's wrong.
Probably.
it doesn't store toxins though.
An air conditioned filter.
But it's not an air conditioned filter. Now I know what I said earlier. I said if you consume a lot of fried foods with canola oil, you're going to clog your liver up. But I didn't specify. You're telling your body to dump toxins in it. But if you get grass fed liver, it's not going to be a problem at all. It's going to be super clean.
Okay.
I know. I'm so sorry for being a jerk, just running all over you on that topic. You know what? When you go to your computer today and you look up a search for hunting wild boar at night, you can start reading about the liver and then what it's supposed to do for the body. But I would say that it's very safe and very good and wholesome. And just look at the old studies on trying to heal people that are so sick they can't even move. They'd give them liver to bring them back to life again. Yeah, I could say, do you want to live? Then take liver. Yeah, and no, I don't blame you at all for questioning, is the liver safe to eat? But I can tell you this, if you go to the store, you know how they have those coffin freezers in the center that are just frozen, but there's no door on them? Liver is absolutely the cheapest substance on earth. But anyway, just consider that.
Okay. Good enough, then. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a good day, buddy. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks.
There are countries, for example, like New Zealand. And New Zealand, they do a great job. If you've ever watched some of those programs on TV where they show you what the terrain and the geography of New Zealand looks like, it's like amazing. But can you imagine the cows eating green, clean grass without chemicals? Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Morgan. My sister-in-law has a fatty liver, her doctor told her, and wants to put her on all these medications, and I told her, no, do not do it. I'll call Dr. Morgan and see what his suggestion is. But I'm going to hang up so I can listen to
what makes you think I know anything about that?
Because I've heard you talk about
okay,
it.
Okay, all right. We'll talk about that. Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Have a great day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay, I'm going to play this a couple different ways, but what I'm doing is I'm giving you options, all right? There is a substance that's found in the yolk of an egg. You know, when you get those brilliant, bright orange, it looks like the sun going down on the sunset or the horizon at dusk. It looks so brilliant, you just love to look at it. Yolks, they contain a substance called lecithin, okay? I would say lecithin would be kind of akin to Dawn dishwashing liquid that would scrub your body clean. So lecithin would definitely be a substance. And the other things are, when you're trying to help the liver remove these fatty deposits, you've got to change your hormones, your metabolism. That's where considering a feeding window, if you want to call this fasting or you want to call it more precisely intermittent fasting, I think that would be the exact proposition you're looking at. And let me give you an idea. So if a person has a fatty liver and it has nothing to do with consuming massive amounts of alcohol, it's just because of the processed food, high sugar, grain diet, that's what it is right there. What happens is you need to try to find a way to get your blood sugar lower. You need to find a way to cause your insulin levels to drop lower. I would say the number 5 is probably appropriate if you want to reverse a fatty liver. So one blood test that you could look at having done, you could request your doctor, your nurse practitioner, your physician's assistant, whoever's ordering the test, maybe whoever. Anyway, just have them measure fasting insulin. That probably tells you a pretty big story right there. If fasting insulin is above the number 5, well, then I'm going to say good luck getting rid of the fatty liver. So if you told yourself, I'm going to try this differently, and you can experiment with the length of time, but you could say anything from, I am going to eat 2 meals a day, all or 3 meals a day, but all the food that I'm going to eat, I'm going to eat within a 6 to 7 to 8 hour window. That means for 16, 17, or 18 hours a day, or you can modify that. I'm not eating food. That means you're fasting. But literally, you understand that people that have fatty livers, they're usually snacking all day long. You just can't do that. That is not in your best interest. Because what you're doing is you're telling your body to increase more insulin. And when you take insulin and you raise it above the number 5, you're telling your body, you're screaming at it, we need you to start converting triglycerides into stored fat. You're telling your body to store fat away in the liver. So like the other day, I looked at a person's insulin levels. I think they were like 27.4. And my simple message was, we got to find a way to get that down. Now, you know what? Sometimes it takes a little while when you hear something for the first time to kind of wrap your head around it before you can start to understand, this is what I got to do. But you cannot be snacking all day long. Every time that you snack, you're telling your body to release insulin. And so what you have is you have all these surges of insulin. That's why the average diabetic, they have about 11 unique surges of insulin. That means something food-wise or sweet has touched their lips 11 times during the day. If you want to reverse that, why don't we knock that down to 2 or 3 times a day? Because if you can get your insulin level to lower, then hormonally, you're flipping a switch and you're telling your body, stop shoving fat and waste into the liver for storage. I know that's different than what the previous caller just told me or asked me about. I know I'm changing the narrative slightly. But if you're wanting your body to get rid of the fat, you've got to start eating differently. So what if you focus mainly on meat and vegetables, and if you need something sweet, that's called fruit salad. Just put your 4-year-old in charge of going to the refrigerator in the kitchen and making a fruit salad for you. Strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, cherries, stuff like that. You know, berries. Now we're in business. Now, the other thing that you got to have is, to get rid of a fatty liver, is you've got to get more blood and oxygen into it. And you're going to do that by starting the process of exercise. So wherever you are, you know, just find a way to start moving your body more. And maybe that would be as simple as writing down on a sheet of paper that you have a goal to walk for 15 minutes today. And maybe that'll be you walk 7.5 minutes away from your front door and you turn around and walk 7.5 minutes back. That's the start. See, what you're doing is a fatty liver means you're not very fit and you want to greatly improve the physical fitness of your body. I'm telling you, when you have a fatty liver, that probably takes about 5 years off your life. I have a book right here. Let me see if I can find it. Okay, here it is right here. I like this book. It's written by Dr. Malcolm Kendrick. And he's a Scottish, I think he's a cardiologist, but I like him a lot. I really do. He has a study in here. Anyway, what you got to do is, here I'm getting sidetracked. They asked me about fatty liver, and I'm already starting to talk about other stuff. So you need to change what you're doing, the way that you eat. If you focus on eating real food that have single ingredients, you're going to win. If you eat packaged foods that have 15 to 18 different chemicals in it, you're never going to win. It's just going to be impossible. My case would be the country of Pakistan, 14.3% of the population, and they're skinny. They got diabetes, which means they got high blood sugar. They've got insulin resistance. That's causing the liver to be exhausted. That's really what a fatty liver is your liver is plumb exhausted. It's worn out. It can't do it anymore. It can't keep up with the abuse. So they know what causes diabetes in Pakistan. Eating processed food with chemicals. What would be one of them? Well, have you ever heard of MSG or monosodium glutamate? That'd be one of them. You want to hear some more? There's one called Splenda or sucralose. If the Food and Drug Administration truly cared about the health of our human beings that live here in America, they wouldn't allow sucralose to be sold. It's very toxic. It causes insulin resistance. You want to have a lot of fat build up in your liver? Just start consuming Diet Cokes. Be a pretty good way to do it. Okay, I realize we're almost out of time, but let me read this to you right here. There was analysis by the University of Oxford, and they calculated the following reductions in life expectancy. If somebody has bipolar disorder, it takes anywhere between 9 to 20 years off their life. It's just very, very bad for the health of a person. And you're saying, why is it 9 to 20 years? Because maybe there's a mild version and there's a severe version. People that have recurrent depression, that takes about 7 to 11 years off their life. It's horrible. Schizophrenia, 10 to 20 years. Now, this one, you're not going to have any problem believing this one because you probably see it and you've witnessed it during your lifetime over and over again. I mean, I have. What if somebody abuses drugs or alcohol? You know what the average length of time that takes strips from your life? 24 years. So if somebody's abusing drugs and alcohol, if they were going to live to be 75, they're not going to make it. They're going to be gone by 51. Now get this right here. Somebody that has elevated blood sugar and diabetes, you know, type 2 diabetes, that takes an average of 20 years off your life. Smoking a couple of packs of cigarettes a day, that takes about 10 years off your life. Lack of exercise, 5 years. Get this one right here. The use of PPIs, those are proton pump inhibitors. That takes 2 years off your life. So if you're taking acid blocking drugs, well, you wanted to make it to 82, but you're not. You're going to only live to 80. Okay, I realize I'm completely out of time. It's been really good to be with you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. This program is Health Essentials. My name is Roy Morgan, and Lord willing, I will be back this time next week.